Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. And, of course, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. So I feel like ever since NIL became legal, the NCAA has been doing everything that they possibly could to remain relevant, to be completely honest with you. Because whenever NIL became legal, all of these NCAA sanctions about autographs and payment, so on and so forth, all of that went out the door. So now I believe the NCAA is trying to do whatever it can to try and put a cap or some sort of sanctions on NIL. The Supreme Court does not vote unanimously on anything. They voted unanimously on NIL. They voted unanimously on NIL not having a cap. They voted unanimously on there being zero interference on how much a student athlete can make. So now the NCAA is going around and trying to find ways that they can at least reel in NIL. Because I knew that once NIL became legal, it was just going to be just an arms race.
Free for all.
Total free for all. Because before, it was really easy for the NCAA to see some sort of cash transaction and say, that's not allowed. Mm-hmm. Because any cash transaction between a booster, between a fan, whoever it might be with a student athlete, that was a no-no. Now, the NCAA is trying to prove intent, which is really hard to do whenever cash transactions are allowed. Mm-hmm. How do you prove the intent of a cash transaction made between a collective and a player, or a brand deal and a player? Mm-hmm. How do you prove the intent of that? And this just came out. The NCAA, I'm trying to pull up the exact verbiage of the deal, if anybody has it up right now.
Yes, the key word is presumption.
Presumption.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I read this twice. Nicole Auerbach had a really good... Nicole Auerbach is an outstanding reporter on college sports. I mean, she really does an outstanding job. She interviewed a guy from the NCAA about this new bylaw that's been passed, mm-hmm. sort of under the radar, that has gone into effect this month. And I think if I'm reading this right, it's basically being used as a tool for the NCAA to lessen the load on their obligation to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that a violation has occurred.
And a violation meaning pay to play.
Yeah,
pay to play.
NIL is a quid pro quo. I give you a commercial. I give you a social media post. I pay you for it. Yeah. You cannot just pay a player.
Yeah, they're supposed to be.
That's the idea.
An exchange for your name, image, and likeness. You're supposed to have to do something for that, yeah. right? That's sort of how it is, but people have skipped past that, it seems like,
yeah.
and just gone to the collectives, and it's just straight up, we'll pay you X. You know, we'll worry about the other stuff. You know, you can post something on your social media. Yeah.
Right. I'll pay you $13 million for a Facebook
yeah.
post.
Yeah, there seems to be ways around it, and it's very unclear what the rules are. And you have a lot of coaches, even guys at the top who can play this game, like Nick Saban. Remember, that was the famous thing that sort of threw the axe down and said, Texas A&M just bought all their players. Mm-hmm. Right? And Nick Saban has always done this in the context, okay, you want to play that way, we'll play that way, we can play that way, but it's not the right thing. That's what Saban likes to do, is say, let's have some rules here. Let's try to do this right to some degree. And I think he's a better person to be saying this sometimes than somebody squawking from, let's just say, Vanderbilt, Stanford, Northwest, where they look like they're high and mighty, right? Nick Saban can play with any rules you want to play, mm-hmm. and he's going to be right there with anybody. But so I think people listen when he says this. Lane Kiffin was out there at the SEC Media Days last year. You were down there, yep. Caroline, where he said, look, this is a salary cap, man. This is crazy. We've got to have something. So I guess this is the best the NCAA can do.
Because
but as I read this,
you can't cap it.
Per
the Supreme Court, you cannot mm-hmm. put a cap on it.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do they do? I guess what they're saying is, let's make it easier for us to bust people, because we have a lot of schools that are saying, you got to do something. Mm-hmm. And so let's make it so if there's something there, we basically say, look, we've got you. You got to prove to us mm-hmm. that something didn't happen here, which is sort of Guilty until proven innocent. Flipped. So that doesn't seem very American. Mm-hmm. They also, but there's also this reputation, I think it's fair, that the NCAA investigation committee right now, the rules enforcement, is zero. Like, what's illegal now? So they're trying to find some traction and find a line that you can't cross. This is the I guess, the best they can come up with for now. But I think we're all kind of going, is this really going to do anything?
And the bylaw says, in cases involving, and this is very legal jargony, and we'll translate.
Yes.
In cases involving name, image, and likeness offers, agreements and or activities in which related communications and conduct are subject to NCAA regulation, the infractions process shall presume a violation occurred if circumstantial information suggests that one or more parties engaged in impermissible conduct. Basically saying that the process will look through to see if there was a violation of NIL, to see if there was a process of...
But you're guilty until you can prove that it didn't happen.
And that's the thing. The way that it's enforced is somebody, entity, media group, media person has to bring this in front of the NCAA. Mm-hmm. So let's say I'm LSU fan Caroline, and you are Michigan State fan Derek. Mm-hmm. And I say, I think me, media person Caroline Fenton comes out and says, I think that Michigan State has been illegally paying Derek Mason money. Mm-hmm. They've been giving him $10 million checks and he hasn't been doing anything about it. I can bring that to the NCAA. Mm-hmm. And the NCAA can deem whether my accusation is serious or not, and that's up to the NCAA, and they go to Michigan State and they say, prove to me that this is wrong. Mm-hmm. Prove to me that Derek Mason is doing something for his NIL deal. That's basically what the process is.
Well, basically, I mean, it's easy to prove that you didn't do anything wrong. That's why I think they sort of set it up, the wording in that manner, because in this country, it's you're innocent until proven guilty, wink, wink. We know that's not the case at all times. But you're innocent until proven guilty. I don't feel sorry for the NCAA. I really don't.
I don't.
I don't feel sorry for any entity that heads up, college football. Because here's the reason why. Because your arrogance thought that you would be able to hold on to that lock and key forever. Like, we got this. You players, y'all just going to play, and your scholarship is enough, and we're feeding you meals and housing you. That's enough. You're not getting anything else. I can remember when those young men and women at Northwestern wanted to start a union. They should have, the NCAA should have really sat down and talked with them. And they probably should have allowed them to establish a union, because then you could have negotiated some type of NIL where there was a cap. But because of your arrogance and you didn't want to do it, and everybody was screaming, they don't need unions, they don't need unions. Why don't they? You wouldn't be in a situation you're in now had you allowed that process to happen, because then you can negotiate things in regards to college athletics. You could have possibly put a cap or salary cap, because Lane Kiffin is right. It's basically free agency and a salary cap. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you would have been able to cap it, discussed it, went back and forth and been able to cap it, you would be in a better position right now. But you thought you were going to be able to hold on to this lock and key forever, and now it puts you in a position where basically you're throwing together these rules like that really, really, if you think about it, doesn't hold weight at all. Because again, if I give a guy, I'm the booster, and I give a guy, say, $1 million, I can have him on day one sign a bunch of stuff and that be it. He ain't got to do nothing else.
Yeah.
And then Caroline calls or puts out, well, this kid hadn't been there because I hadn't seen him doing it. And I just say, hey, listen, this is what he's did. This is what he has done or she has done. Now get off my back. That's the way you kind of get through all of this mess. The NCAA, they don't know what to do, so they're throwing together rules.
This is a last-ditch effort for the NCAA to maintain relevancy with it.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm hoping it's not the last-ditch. I'm hoping that they're trying to build. Like, they
but
had
what,
to
else get, well, what else are they going to do, Willie?
This is how I saw it, right? Nobody really knows what the rules are. So,
yeah, you're right. Because I was like, Willie, what is the rule?
Because we all kind of assume that there are none, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of how people are operating right now. It's like, who's ever going to prove what we're doing? Let's just do whatever we need to do to try to get the players we need to get, and we'll just deal with it otherwise. So I think this guy's name is John Duncan. I think they were just desperately trying to say that we're still out here.
Mm-hmm.
There is somebody.
We still exist.
We still exist, and we're going to try to police this. Like, it's like a new frontier, right? You got the tumbleweeds. You got these new, the wild, wild west towns going up. There's no law.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, somebody wants to go take your money. Mm-hmm. Well, what are you going to do about it? There's nothing you can do. There's no police. There's no rules. It doesn't say you can't go rob them. What's going to happen? The police aren't there. Like, mm-hmm. So I think they're trying to say, we have to try to start somewhere. And what jumped out at me in this is he says, it's an opportunity to remind the membership and the public that while we're working around the clock, we still need help from members, other schools who have information, and from individuals who've got details that would be helpful to us. In other words, help us.
Tell each other, please.
Police each other. If you want there to be a system, you have to police each other to a point.
And I
right?
think there's a problem with that.
Okay.
And I want to get into that coming up next. And, of course, your thoughts on this, 615-737-1025, and the rest of the questions that I have, I think we all have, about what exactly does this mean and what will this do for NIL. That coming up next, Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
Speaking on free agency, I've been vocal about this before, just kind of that mystery report of an $8 million NIL deal for a kid who hasn't maybe thrown a snap in college. What are your thoughts on this? It seems like it's kind of swelling and growing. And y'all talked about having to compete with those other kind of levels.
Yeah, I mean, I've obviously said a lot about NIL from the beginning of it. Let's make sure that we understand. I love that the players are getting paid, and I just say how it is. So, you know, I mean, I guess I got called a clown before for saying how it is. NIL has a lot to do with where players go. And to not think that's crazy. And I mean, it'd literally be like being a head coach in the NFL, signing a great free agency class, you know, of signing guys, going out and getting these great players and coming up here and saying to you guys, the contracts had nothing to do with why the players came here. You know, they just want to come play for me. So, obviously, it has a lot to do with where players go, and it should. I mean, you're talking about 17, 18-year-old kids, you know. Adults choose jobs a lot of times for money, for salary. So why would a kid not?
There you go. That was Lane Kiffin over the spring. And look, I am sick of Lane Kiffin's whining and crying and antics just as much as the next person. But I think that Lane Kiffin represents a coach at a school that doesn't have the resources like a Texas A&M or a Texas or an Alabama or a Georgia, so on and so forth, that is kind of seeing the effects of NIL, that they're losing out on really quality players because Ole Miss or other schools that don't have the resources just can't present as attractive NIL offers as other schools can. And the NCAA is trying their best at trying to, you know, close Pandora's box while also operating under the law. The NCAA cannot put a cap on how much money individual college players make. The Supreme Court has made that very clear.
Mm-hmm.
So what the NCAA is trying to do is at least try to make sure that NIL, the way that it was originally brought, that it is quid pro quo, you do something for me, I'll pay you money, that is coming to fruition. So that's where the NIL presumption law comes in, where the bylaw comes in.
And this is what I like about Lane Kiffin. If my kid was playing football and, you know, Lane was a coach somewhere at a big college, I would probably want my son to, you know, think about playing for Lane Kiffin, because it just seems like there's just something different about him when it comes to just calling it how it is. Like, listen, all coaches have the BS in them. You know, all of them do, from Saban to all of them. They have but then they know, the great ones know, hey, listen, I got to be honest, too, with this kid. And Lane was basically, he was thinking about it from a realistic standpoint. Like, listen, I've thought about this. And, you know, you can't sit here and say, well, you know, these kids are not picking schools based upon the money they're getting. That is just, you're fooling yourself if you think that that's not the case now and moving forward. Now, okay, I get it. You know, people like Alabama, you know, teams like Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State, some of these rich, traditioned universities, programs, they're going to get guys to come and girls to come. Why? Because they probably grew up fans of that university, or their mom and dad went there, or somebody in their family went there, or they may have went to a camp and just loved it. So they're going to go regardless.
It's because, big programs.
Exactly.
They're
because attractive. Everybody's not getting paid.
Right.
But when you talk about those five stars, a lot of those five stars and four star guys, they are going to your university now because who has the biggest check to offer me? Which one of y'all? You know, if it's between Alabama and Ohio State, well, and I like both of y'all. I like both coaches. Who's giving me, one, who's giving me the biggest check? And then two, who's going to give me the better opportunity to play? But more importantly, who's writing out the biggest check?
And you can see how complicated that would
exactly.
be to answer, especially if you're a quarterback.
Absolutely.
So you only play one quarterback. You know, if you're a defensive lineman or an offensive mm-hmm. lineman or a guy that's played both in high school, I can figure out how to get you in there. Mm-hmm. A
but a quarterback
easier.
Is different.
Quarterback, you can see where it's the most money,
mm-hmm.
and you only have one slot. Only one guy can play. So you just know how crazy that's going to get, and it's only going to get crazier with the transfer portal, people promise money,
mm-hmm.
getting money, not playing. Like there's all kinds of things that are going to happen here. And so it's like a cry for help, right? Mm-hmm. Lane Kiffin, I don't think he's saying he knows exactly what the solution is. Certainly this article we're referring to today, the presumption rule is not going to be the magic pill that's going to solve all the problems here. You got to start somewhere, though. Like, I think collectively, coaches have to decide, what do they want the system to be? Let's talk through it more. I wish we were having more discussions about how can we change the system so it is not total madness.
But
because
the coaches
can't. It's
total
madness right now.
The coaches can't because the Supreme Court says there's no cap.
Right, but you have to work with that knowledge, right?
Uh-huh.
We know there's no cap. We know there's going to be money out there. We know the system has changed forever. But can we not collectively figure out
No, because there's too many. There's too many egos in the room. If we all get together and say, well, you can only pay, you know, upwards of $2 million. That's it. For everybody across the board. Somebody's going to eventually break that.
Right. No, I'm not even saying that, really. But I think about what it's like to be a coach. Think about, just, we'll use Lane Kiffin.
I'm sure it's hard.
Your job used to be, I recruit high school kids. Mm-hmm. You know, now your job is 10 times more complicated than it used to be.
You're getting 10 times more of the salary, too.
Are they getting way more than they used to
yes,
get now with NIL?
Coaches. These coaches. I'm talking about the coaches.
In the last year or two, do they get a bonus for
no,
because
what I'm saying
now you
got to
deal with NIL,
no,
everybody gets a raise?
No, what I'm saying is that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, these coaches are not getting paid what they're getting paid now.
Right, you're right. The coaches,
their pay is double in
I'm
a lot of
I'm just talking
times.
About quality of life, right, to do mm-hmm. your job. Now there are three or four more things on your plate mm-hmm. than there were 2 years ago.
You got to
manage
your own
the money.
Players.
You got to re-recruit
you
your
money,
own players.
You better do it.
You got to figure out how much money you have. You got to work with these goofy collectibles, or what are they called?
Collectives.
Collectives, uh-huh. right, that are doing how do you deal with that? You're not supposed to be dealing with them, but everybody knows you have to try to
hey,
work
really.
In cahoots with them.
If you
it's
don't
complicated.
Have a collective, you're
it's not just you get into coaching so you can coach kids, right? And you can put together plays and have fun and put together good winning teams. Now it's so complicated now.
But the coaches are not supposed to have any connection
right.
to
oh,
it. So
sure.
that's why I'm like, listen, y'all should stay out of it. You know, it shouldn't be any harder because y'all don't have to deal with the money, supposedly. It only gets hard when you are in the middle of the money. Like if you're just coaching, like I get it. I got to continue to recruit my players and they should. The one thing I hated about college football, I can't say basketball because I didn't play. But the one thing I hated about college football, once they got you there, they turned their head and was looking towards someone else. Now you're forced to make relationships, which is great. Y'all shouldn't complain about it. You're forced to make relationships with these kids now.
But it's not just relationships. It's financial relationships. And that's why
complicated.
There's a direct correlation between the collectives and the money and the coaches. It's because in the two transfer portal windows, there is absolutely nothing that stops a player from entering the transfer portal and basically testing free agency, testing the open market. Let's say I am a quarterback. I'm a quarterback at the University of Tennessee. I'm making $2 million at Tennessee, and I had a really good year, and I'm not making any more NIL money. I'm going to enter the transfer portal and see if Vanderbilt is going to offer me three.
Well, they're not.
See if Ohio State's going to offer me five. There's nothing stopping me from doing that. So me as a coach, I don't want my starting quarterback to enter the transfer portal. So I have to communicate with the collective and say, I need to keep my quarterback happy.
You're not supposed
happy.
To.
They have to. That is a clear, and the collective is
but
not
then you
is
might
not
get
supposed
the presumption
to be.
Exactly.
Rule.
And that's fine. I can work with my collective and say, hey, see if you can get Caroline a deal with XYZ business in Knoxville because we need to keep her on this team. And maybe that's against the rules. Everyone's doing it. And if you aren't doing it, you lose your players. And you also, it's the same thing with recruiting. And the best example I can give to that is Jaden Rashada, who is a quarterback from California who's in the 2023 recruiting class, and his deal with Florida. The Gator Collective signed
and
a 13.
And there are two of them, right? There are two entities that do the sort of, there's a official collective, and then there's this other Gator booster club, basically.
I'm sure there is.
So they were, that was part of what made it complicated was there were two groups that Florida is pooling or getting money from, two sources.
And he signed this $13 million contract with this collective.
Signed it.
And then the deal fell through. So Jaden Rashada is now committed to Arizona State. So now the collective's business is a direct reflection of the football team and their business. And now Florida doesn't have a quarterback because of what the collective did. So I know ideally the collective is one thing and your football team is the other thing, but they have to work hand in hand.
I think there should be, you know, in regards to that, and I know it will be hard to do. Like, listen, if you promise, if these men and women – sign letters, not letter of intent to the college, but if they sign this letter over here saying, okay, yeah, you said I'm offering you X amount of dollars to go to this university, and I sign that, and then I go to that university or sign a letter to intent, you should be held bound to that. Like, listen, you said this is what you were going to give me if I signed here. This was one of my schools on the list. You said this is what you're going to give me when I sign. Then you have to honor that. It doesn't seem like, in this case, unless I don't know everything, that they honored.
The money wasn't there.
Exactly. So
that's why lawyers get involved.
Exactly. Yeah. So now
he got out of his letter of intent.
Yeah.
So now whoever offered that money should be removed completely from anything that the university has to do, you know, with athletics or just period, because now you've brought sort of this bad light to the university, and no one's going to look at you. They're going to look at this 18-year-old kid and dump on him or her, and it's not their fault. You promised them something, they went, and then you reneged on it.
Why but it wasn't then, the university.
Exactly. Why should
the
I then get mad at the
Which
player?
Is a direct reflection. Right?
Exactly. Why should I get
thing.
Mad at the player? If the player wants to leave, let him leave, because the people that promised him the money somehow was connected to the university. The university knew, but they said they didn't know. And if he or she backs out of it, out of what you promised the man or the girl, the student athlete, then something should happen to them. Not necessarily. We shouldn't dump on a student athlete.
And I don't.
And we're not. We're not dumping on a student athlete right now. But I'm just saying.
But it's unfortunately that's the case.
Yeah.
That now we all look, and I don't.
But we don't even know who the people were.
I think a lot of people now look at any student athlete, but specifically Jaden Rashada, the one that I'm talking about, now in a negative light because
exactly.
they view him as a kid that only went to Florida for the money. Which, if a kid wants to go to a school just for the money, fine,
let him go.
For it. I don't care. It's not my decision.
Lane Kiffin said it correctly. He said, "Listen, even adults take jobs because of money." So why, if an adult going to take a job because of money, what makes you think a kid is not going to do that? So why are you getting upset with the kid? Because y'all promised him something, he signs, y'all renege, he leaves. Let the kid leave. Y'all didn't give him what was promised.
And I don't think this is going to work. And I'll explain why coming up next. And, of course, your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 1025-1063 The Game. And, hey, it is Love Week on 1025-1063 The Game, brought to you by a Moment Please Day Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs. Love Week.
Why every week can't be Love Week?
Ooh, la, la.
That's a great question, D. Mays.
Oh, why are we only taking one? Said, ooh, la, la.
We got 52 weeks here.
Exactly.
There's no love in the other 51 weeks.
There's extra love this week.
Extra love.
So tune in to Rob Van Rex Road tomorrow morning between 6 and 9 a.m. for details on how you could win a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Day Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs and qualify for a chance to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card. So now the NCAA has brought out the NIL presumption bylaw, which is trying to at least streamline NIL and say, hey guys, please follow the rules of NIL. Please, 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 because we're living in a day and age of wild, wild west. And I don't think it's going to work worth a lick. And here are a couple reasons why. First and foremost, the presumption rule is based off of an individual that brings information or presents information to an athletic department and says, hey, I think that your team is doing something against the books. So what's stopping any school on the week of, let's say, okay, what's Michigan, Ohio State. What is stopping Ohio State on the week of the Michigan game from putting out information that says, I think that Jim Harbaugh is handing out Benjamins at the end of every game to all their defensive linemen? What's stopping them from doing that? And then the NCAA starts an investigation, and I don't know what the punishment is going to be, but what if those Michigan defensive linemen are on probation or suspended for that week? Well, then what's stopping anybody from doing that? And I don't know what the process is going to be. I don't know if it's going to be that obvious or that immediate of a reaction or that, you know, radical of a reaction. But still, that's a question that I have.
And that was a question that Nicole Auerbach asked in the interview to this John Duncan from the NCAA Enforcement Bureau, if you want to call it that. And she said, you know, could somebody purposely plant false information knowing that the margin that you need now, you know, you're presumed guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And he did say, look, we have to have a system of sifting through that. We do have to take the information and then decide, you know, is this legit information?
So what is that?
Well, that's to be determined. So, for example, some of the biggest scandals have been born out of really good investigative journalism, right? Mm-hmm. From Charles Robinson at Yahoo or, you know, I'm trying to think of some other really good journalists that have uncovered some things over the years. There's been a number of them.
The Boston Globe.
There's been a lot.
The whole thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure. And you know, SMU, that whole Pony Express, that's a great 30 for 30. It was the newspapers in Dallas that were competing against one another that were really good at systematically uncovering the pay scan. They were NIL before NIL,
absolutely.
They had a payroll going for Eric Dickerson and all those guys. They had it going.
Cars and everything.
Yeah.
Man.
So,
what a fun time to be playing for SMU.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. For a few years it was.
They
then
pay
it
for
wasn't
it.
Very fun after a while. When
exactly.
They, yeah.
Man.
So he said, we don't want to fall prey to that. We don't want to be a pawn in somebody else's scheme. Like if somebody just on message boards and stuff like that. So they're going to take into account who's providing information. Mm-hmm. But he did say that it's important for people to come forth with knowledge. If they know that something's going on, tell us. Bring it to us. We will vet it. We will filter it, and we'll decide, do we need to do something here? And he said that's going to be ultimately a very important part of the process. Now, obviously, if some Yahoo just sends an email and says, you know, I think LSU's cheating. I don't know.
LSU is cheating.
This is what I heard hearsay. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to take that with a grain of salt. But if two or three sources line up, and I'll give you an example back in the day when Ed Orgeron was hired by Ole Miss, 8 coaches in the league, and there were only 12 teams in the league back then, they turned him in for cheating. And then the next thing you know, Ole Miss was on probation, and they sunk to the bottom, and Ed Orgeron was gone.
They were cheating better than the other schools, let's just say that.
Yeah.
Well, and that is always the thing, too.
If
you're
going to
turn
some,
if you're going to turn somebody in, you have to make sure your side of the street is clean.
And that's,
right?
Because
that's what's gone on. So how is that going to manifest itself with this?
Is what incentivizes anybody from bringing things forward. Because as soon as I call in Willie, there's a target on my back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
'Cause what's stopping Willie from turning me in? Mm-hmm. And I think everyone is cheating. I think everyone is doing things against the book. And if you're not, you're probably not doing it correctly. So what is stopping anybody from, you know, the first domino that falls, I think is going to cause just a complete firestorm.
Hey, Mel because Tucker's not cheating.
But that's why. Don't we have to set the baseline somewhere? I think that's what they're trying to do here, and I don't think this is going to work. But I think they need more. But they're trying to establish a line, guardrails. I heard guardrails by about 20 different coaches last summer at all of the media days discussing this new frontier that we're on. Let's try to decide what do we want the rules to be, because that's part of. I'm not going to turn you in if I'm doing the same thing that you're doing. But if we're the only two people that are crossing the line and 10 other coaches say, look at these two, they're different than everybody else. They're doing things that we're not doing. Mm-hmm. That's where maybe you start finding where that line is, right? Mm-hmm. But right now we don't know where the line is because there are no rules. We don't know what the rules are.
And my other thing is, so who's going to be the ones in charge of clearing their name? The schools themselves. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you bring up these guidelines or bylaws or at least institute these things that say, hey, we have got our eyes on you, I think these schools are going to do whatever they need to do to cover their bases so they at least, if they are breaking the rules, they have a way to clear their name. Mm-hmm. That's like, you know, if you're on trial for murder and you're the person that says, no, I'm not guilty, and they say, okay, you know, we believe you. You bring some sort of evidence forth that, like, look where I was on this day. And they say, oh, okay. So I think that's another difficult thing is if when you leave the institutions and the schools and the athletic departments up to their own fate, they're going to cover their bases.
Yes, they are. I wonder if there's a – and I know the coaches can only get involved to a certain extent. Really are not supposed to get involved at all. But I wonder if there's a sort of a mechanism in play or a law by law within, you know, the NCAA's constitution that says, okay, we know who the boosters are because they all know who the boosters are because I'm sure the boosters donate just to the university, period, whether it be athletics or academics. So if you know who these boosters are, that we bring them in a room, whoever they are, say it's five of them. We bring all five of them in the room with the president, AD, and whoever else. And I know the coach probably can't be a part of that, but you bring them in and say, listen, these are the rules. There may not be many, but these are sort of the guardrails and the rules that are in place. If indeed you do offer NIL to our student athletes, please make sure that they are doing something. Like, I'm not asking them to work a 9-to-5 or, you know, take all the time away from their studies and playing whatever respective sport they're in. But make sure these young men and women are doing something. Mm-hmm. Because the last thing I want as an AD or president is to see a kid, you know, get an NIL deal. And I'm thinking everything is on the up and up. And then it comes back. Well, this kid wasn't doing anything. They just gave him the money. Now it's like, you're looking at these boosters like y'all hurting us more than y'all are helping us. So at least if y'all offering these things, make them do something. They have to do something in order to get this money and not just play football, basketball, baseball, run track. They got to actually physically either go to your business and do some work or sign autographs, but they have to do something.
Social media posts.
Exactly. You have to
do
something.
Takes 30 seconds.
Yeah. Well, but show that they are doing something. Like, right. You got to post twice a week during a football season.
It doesn't have to be nothing.
Yep. Because you can set your – I think you can – and I'm not that savvy when it comes to social media, but I think there is a mechanism where you can set for a future post on there, and it just – it goes. So just make sure they're doing something. So if it ever comes back to us, we have receipts say, hey, listen, this is what this young man or this young woman did.
And if schools do want to break the rules, I know that they will make these student athletes sign contracts where the threshold to meet the qualifications is so low that they can bring it forward and say, well, we said that we're going to pay you $12 million for a tweet, and they tweeted. Like,
hey,
I mean,
that's it.
This is
that's
fine.
That's all they had to do.
And so that's why I think that the intention of streamlining things and to at least try and level the playing field as much as possible, you're only going to find new avenues to
absolutely. Just like when they did the APR, you know, you had to be progressing towards your degree.
Yeah.
What happened? They just set up easier classes is what they pretty much did.
I took a few of those.
If they needed to, right? If the school needed to do that, that's how they sort of adjusted. They're like, well, he's progressing. They figured it out, right?
Yeah.
And so all the schools say, yeah, look, we're scoring well in the APR. We're doing fine. There's a great movie from the late 70s. It's a scrub movie, but you could probably find it on YouTube. Right? It's called One-on-One. Mm-hmm. Robbie Benson was the guy, but he was a kind of a small-town kid who gets a scholarship to a big-time college basketball program, and he gets a job to get a little extra money. He's like, okay, that sounds good. What's my job? You're going to water the golf course. And he shows up the first morning for his job, and he gets there, and the sprinkler system's on.
So he just had to turn on the sprinkler system, basically.
He didn't even have to do that. It was already on. The players started laughing.
Check.
That's your job. Here's your paycheck. Oh, this is great. Automatic sprinklers.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll continue to get your thoughts on that. But I think we're all worrying about something. We are. NCAA is. Lane Kiffin is. Nick Saban is. About something that we really don't need to worry about. And I'll explain why coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.
A lot of people want to talk about NIL, and one of the themes I've started to hear you mix in a lot more is who's protecting the players. And you talk about the NFL structure a lot, and you've got an agent, you've got structure, and everyone knows what they can do. NIL is kind of what NIL is right now, but when you talk about the need to protect players, what specifically do you mean?
Exactly what you said, there's more and more people trying to get between the player and the money. These people have to have no qualifications. Who knows what kind of advice and direction they're giving to players, how they're protecting players from signing, deals that may not be in their best interest or, may create future problems for them in terms of other things that they're doing. College guys are still student athletes, where they're involved in personal development, they're involved in academics, they're involved in developing a career off the field, they're involved in, developing a career on the field. Like you said, the NFL has a Players Association. Players Association govern agents to protect the players. Our players in college don't have anyone to protect them and make sure the people who are representing them are qualified to do that.
There you go. That was Nick Saban at SEC Media Days, and he's been outspoken about NIL, how he thinks that there needs to be some sort of guidance. He spoke out against Jimbo Fisher, quote-unquote, buying their recruiting class, and that's what unfolded the whole, czar of college football, Jimbo Fisher calling Nick Saban despicable. We all remember it. But the NCAA instituted the new bylaw to try and at least stop the chaos within NIL. And I know that Lane Kiffin has spoken out against it, Nick Saban has spoken out against it, and I'm sure that there are so many coaches, coordinators, athletic directors inside the building saying, we are just so sick and tired of this. But I think that we are going to get to a point where we're not going to have to worry about it anymore. Because have you ever seen the show Wife Swap? It's like there's two families and they switch moms. And there's always one family that the mom lets them have junk food and stay up late and watch movies. And there's another family where the mom is very strict about diet and bedtime and what they can do on the weekends. And whenever they switch families, the strict mom or the strict kids go to the fun mom and they think it's so fun for the first couple of days. And then they're like, wait, we're tired and we don't have anything to eat. And they quickly start to realize that what seemed really fun really wasn't all that fun anyway, and we kind of liked some of the order, some of the rules. That's what I think we're going to get to with NIL. In this era of NIL, where we are with college football, all the strict mom kids are with the fun mom kids, and we're like, woohoo, we can pay players all we want. And then it's going to get to a point like it did with Jaden Rashada, where a $13 million deal fell through and Florida doesn't have a quarterback anymore. We're going to get to the point where all of these boosters are pumping money into these collectives, and there's $8 million deals and $10 million deals for quarterbacks. Well, and the expectation is that quarterback wins the Heisman. They bring us to the promised land. Well, not every quarterback getting those deals is going to be able to do that. Not every single quarterback or player making millions of dollars is going to be able to win the Heisman and win the national championship every single year. We're going to get to a point, at least I think, maybe not, but I think we could get to a point where some of these boosters, these collectives, these deals are like, look, we just can't put this much money into it anymore because we're not getting our return on investment, and the market will correct itself.
I've said from the start, pretty consistently, if you just set out to chase money, there's going to be more losers than winners, and even the winners might win in the short term, but might lose in the long term. I just think Nick Saban, you can be cynical about what he says there, but I think Nick Saban is a guy that understands that you're trying to create a culture. You're trying to create an environment. You want kids, as many as you can, to have a good experience. It's a learning experience, learning how to be a better football player, but also just learning who you are as a young adult, right? These are important formative years where you're supposed to be in college, so you don't need to worry about making money, right? Mm-hmm. You want to learn how you're going to live the rest of your life. So I'm hoping that more and more kids understand this and realize this, that it is important, the experience you have. Not necessarily does that experience mean you made an extra $100,000 over here because you transferred from over there, where maybe your experience might have been better where you were originally. You might get to place B. You got more money, but the experience wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? That's what I will always say. And I know people are going to be like, this isn't the real world anymore. You know, let the kids make money. I get that. And some people are going to win, but I think there's going to be more losers than winners.
Will it ever correct itself? No, never correct itself, regardless of what the situation is, because there's always going to be a player that everybody wants, whether it's basketball, football, baseball, or track, but more importantly, the two main sports, basketball and football, whether it be men's basketball, women's basketball. The way these athletes are, the way they are growing now, the things they can do at such an early age now compared to when I was growing up, Willie, when you were growing up, these kids are so much more specialized now. It just seems like whatever they're putting in the water and what they're putting in the food, these kids are developing at a faster rate. And, you know, families are paying money to put their kids at a young age in these specific programs geared toward whether it be football or basketball or tennis or whatever the sport is, golf. So to me, as long as there are these elite athletes, men or women, there's always going to be someone willing to pay them top dollar to get them at their university. I don't think there's ever going to be this cap. I don't think the market will correct itself. I can't see that happening because there's going to be a five-star athlete in football or basketball that everybody says is the next, say, for instance, the next Tom Brady or the next LeBron James or the next Tiger Woods or, you know, the next great tennis player, Serena Williams. There's always going to be that one, and everybody's going to covet them. So what's going to happen? It's going to push the price right back up. It may lull for a couple of years, but then that generational player is going to come through. For instance, the kid, just think about the kid in basketball now that everybody wants to get in the first pick. He has this long name. I can't pronounce it. But this kid.
Like the Zion of this year.
Yeah, he's like just a freak of nature. Like, but he's an overseas kid.
Right.
Just think if he was an born and raised here and everything else, and they're looking at his talent, 6'11", can play like a guard, can shoot like Steph Curry. You can't tell me that there's not. Everybody in the country are like, how much can we ante up to get this kid?
Right.
You know, how much money? NBA teams are doing it now, trying to tank the giddy.
Sure, sure.
So.
But I think we also had to try to realize that those guys are so rare.
Yeah.
That's going to happen, right? That's been happening. But there's so many other kids that are on the levels below that that are trying to get into this game. And like I said, to me, it's much more important at a college age to find a good environment. And that should be secondary to, am I getting extra money? Like, if you're in a good spot, like I'll give you an example. Mac Brown talked about his quarterback this year. Ended up being a Heisman candidate. He said flat out, teams were calling and saying, we would like to buy you. Would you like to come to our school? Tell me what it would take. We'll pay you to be our quarterback next year. And he said, I'm staying. I'm having a good experience here. I want to stay at North Carolina. I admire him for doing that. He's probably leaving money on the table. But he's banking on, I'm doing well, I'm being successful where I am, so let's stay here.
I also think, and I don't know Drake May's background, but I think having the ability to be able to leave money on the table is a privilege. And I'm not naive to the fact that there are so many student athletes whose families are in really tough economic positions.
Yeah.
And that's what's hard, is if I come from a really tough background and I'm here and I'm eating the best food and I'm staying in the nicest places and my parents, my siblings are back at home in a rundown house and they're struggling to make ends meet and I love where I am, but I'm getting offered millions of dollars somewhere else and I have the opportunity to give my family a better opportunity, I have to take it. And I know that not every situation is going to be so black and white or so harsh.
But could you be helping yourself in the short term but hurting yourself in the long term by
doing
that?
Maybe so. And that's the reality of it, is maybe you go to a school that doesn't set you up for success in the long run. And that's why I think a lot of times we use the argument of NIL or NFL for the college football space. You can make a whole lot more money in the NFL if you stay here. You know, Alabama might not be giving out the same NIL deals that Texas A&M might be giving out. But, you know, Alabama, you might be able to get a better opportunity to play, might be able to get a better opportunity in the NFL. And I'm just using those two schools as an example.
But what Mac Brown didn't say is how much it costs to keep him there.
That's part of it, too.
Awesome.
And,
exactly.
And that is what a coach has to do. Okay, look, we appreciate you want to stay here. Let's see what we can do for
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Elliot Friedman is going to join us coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.